And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back to 7:55 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer at The Athletic. I'm with my co-host as usual, former Braves reliever Eric O'Flaherty. And we've got a special guest with us, one of Eric's former teammates, Chad Durbin, another former reliever. And Chad, you spent a year with the Braves, right, towards the end of your career?
Yeah, I got to spend a year with O, and I got to watch Chipper do his retirement tour.
Oh, that's right, 2000.
McCann and David Ross catching.
Oh, yeah, that was a great chemistry
young
team.
Young talent, some older guys. That was a great team. Inske, it was a good group.
Yep. Eric, that's the team that you've had. I think we had Hinsky on, or somebody we're talking about, that's like the best chemistry, or Moylan talked about the best chemistry team you've been on.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't win a World Series or something, because we all act like it. You know, we want to have reunions and stuff, but it's it's harder to pull off when you were out in the first round, or even that was a wild card year.
I think Hinsky and Ross have said the same thing.
One game play in.
Yep.
Oh, that was the Cardinals.
Well, the infield fly game.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, man. What a way to end it.
Yeah.
The Chipper farewell tour, man. That was something. Chad, we've talked quite a bit about Chipper at the end of his career, how he did not find rehab assignments necessary. He would just go out there and rake without doing anything. Come off the surgeon's table.
Look, he'd get in there early, do whatever in the training room. You kind of sit there and do crosswords, really. That was his way of saying I was in the room.
Yeah, do his crossword puzzles.
I don't know if he told you this, Eric, but he told me, I said, hey, I'll get everything to the right on a bunt or a swinging bunt. He goes, I'm just telling you, I'm going to barehand everything so it's not an error. So if you can get it, go get it. I can't get it. And I remember laughing. I thought he was kidding with me. He was like, no, seriously.
I've never heard that.
He knew I couldn't get to anything. So
that's a good strategy, though. Try to barehand it. If you don't get it, it's not an error.
You never heard that, Dave?
Keep that fielding percentage up.
Yeah, that's kind of like the unknown thing a lot of guys do. You know, if they're questionable on a play, they just barehand it. If you make the play, you're a hero. If you don't, it's a hit.
I tell you what, Chipper made it in the latter half of his career probably as much as anybody in a game at that time.
Yep.
And that one year, he
phenomenal at it.
That one year, he legitimately should have won a gold glove over, one of the years that maybe, I don't know if Wright won more than one. The Mets?
Maybe, yeah, I can't remember.
Wright was so good, but at the same time, I mean, it's
Chipper had a year. He had a year where he deserved it. But, you know, how those things go. If one guy wins it once or twice,
it's hard to lose it.
He gets the benefit of the doubt. Once you've won a couple of them, it's like, I'll vote for him. You know, especially back then when it was strictly done by the coaches voting.
Yeah, there wasn't any metrics.
Yeah.
No. And I've seen there was a time they came by with the – I was saw in the coaches' room, they were – the Braves coaches were voting on it, and you get that, who was the gold glover in center fielder last year? I'll go with him. You know, that's the kind of research they put into it sometimes.
Yeah.
It's much more scientific now with the analytics component that's involved and all that. It's still not always accurate, but it's a lot more than it used to be. But anyway, defensive metrics.
No doubt.
Defensive metrics have a long way to go to catch up with the analytics and offense, I think.
Well, I think they're good, a good lamppost meant to light up what you maybe need to see, but it's not meant to be leaned up against.
Yeah. Good way of putting it.
I think so.
I'm old school, like Snit said the other day, when it comes to defensive metrics, and I know modern analytics, younger people hate to hear this, But I'll take the eye test on defense, man. Watching a guy play every day, I think you I can get more out of that than I can on analytics if I see him play every day.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I think what you want is the plays that your eyes say should be made, you want them to be made.
Yes.
You know, anything beyond that is a plus, and maybe the metrics play in there. A guy has better foot speed or better jumps or catches more. Catch probability percentages is, you know, on the upper tier, whatever. But make the plays you're supposed to. Make the throws you're supposed to. Communicate well. I mean, all the little things that just if it doesn't happen, your eyes, you know, immediately your gut is like, man, this guy doesn't belong here.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't need to be renowned the way he is. Yeah, I totally agree there.
I also, you know, for me, it's there's certain guys that, you know, if the ball's hit to them with the game on the line, it's an out. And they make better plays. Maybe they don't make this play in the third, but there's guys that make plays late in the game that I don't know if the metrics weigh that or not, but there's guys where I'm like,
they don't make weigh when it's made, when the play's made.
There's a chopper down the third baseline. This guy's barehanding it. Yeah, he's faster with the game on the line. Something happens where even when you're pitching, there's certain guys when the ball's to them with the game on the line, you feel like you don't even have to look.
And it doesn't take into account.
You're right in your scorebook.
Yep.
Things like positioning, like how good the guy is to your left or right in the outfield, or how much ground you're helping the third baseman cover. You know, a lot of things are not taken into account with defensive metrics until they can find a way to figure that. Like we had the guy on one time, and he talked about how they have a guy at every ballpark to kind of award guys for extra effort or some factor that played into it. But I still don't think it's coming. Man, it brought up something. I was just watching Brian Kenny on MLB Network because Trout passed Joe D yesterday in something, Joe DiMaggio in something, some big statistic. So they were comparing Joe DiMaggio to Trout. And to hear Brian Kenny, oh, I love Brian Kenny, but he was so heavy into the analytics. To hear them comparing war between Mike Trout and Joe DiMaggio. But Joe DiMaggio played in the 1940s. And you're going to tell me that they can accurately come up with an accurate war for Joe D for base running, for defense, all that from the 1940s? Like, based on what? Black and white grainy footage of the highlights of the game?
Yeah, and it's always sped up.
They fought in a real war?
Yeah, they didn't even have the whole games weren't even televised. They don't have footage of all the plays. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy.
That was based on the box scores. Those are box scores only war.
Box scores only. Like, you can't get anything out of defense from box scores.
Right.
Anyway. I know what they're trying to do because when you use war as – because war is a great statistic now. But to try to retrofit it for previous eras that don't have all the games where you could just easily look at the game on video and watch everything that happened and see StatCast chronicles everything now, measures everything, every play, every guy's running, out sprint speed. But they did that didn't exist 20 years ago, much less 90 years ago.
Yeah.
But
anyway, oh, no doubt.
Try to tell me Babe Ruth's war. Oh, okay. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. Thanks for trying, though.
But all right,
yeah,
so,
we appreciate it. Got
it. So it's good to have you on here now because you pitched how many years? You pitched several years for the Phillies, right?
I pitched 8, 9, 10, and about half of 13.
And you keep up with them still, right?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I followed all the games last year. I follow a good bit of the games this year.
All right, so you're a pretty good voice to talk about this then, because we got a big series coming up here, and starting tonight, four games between the Braves and the Phillies. We thought it was going to be a lot bigger series than it is, but the Phillies have been disappointing so far, Phillies and the Mets, which has helped the Braves because, I mean, the Braves have this huge lead, and if you've watched the Braves play every day, you know, they've had a pretty rough couple of weeks, yet they've only lost two games on the 7.5 game lead they had. They're still up 5.5 on the Mets, which has as much to do with how the Mets are playing and the Phillies are playing and the Marlins too, but as it does how the Braves are playing. They have the best record in the National League, though, and their fans don't want to hear that because they've watched them struggle a little bit in the last couple of weeks. But that's when you raise the bar that high, I guess, people expect so much. And the Braves lose 8 out of 12, and it's like, oh, my God, the bottom's collapsing from the team. But Where do you think the Phillies are, and can we expect them to make a run given that Harper's back now and they've got talent? There's no doubt about that. And the bullpen's finally better than it has been in recent years.
Well, and I think that's one of the keys. It's probably something that I look at when I'm watching a team play an entire series or 6-10 games in a row, is you start to see, you know, the cracks in the armor or kind of the highlights. And when your pen has 2 or 3, 4 arms that can kind of mix in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, it means you're
yeah.
going to win the games you're supposed to win. And with their offense, look, Schwarber's still hitting under 200.
Yeah.
Trey Turner is one of my favorite players to watch, and he's just been slow out of the gates. I think yep. the adrenaline from the WBC, new team, a little late to the show. I think about Castellanos last year. He signed late, and I'm not saying that Trey signed late at all, but Trey did come to – he missed some of spring training, mm-hmm. missed some of the normal batting practice you might get with Kevin Long. You know, guys in the – you know, I'm going to pitch around Trey Turner. I don't care who – I mean, they've got a lineup that's loaded. I just think they're streaky. They're like a three-point shooter. They get hot, they're going to win 6 in a row. They go cold, or if Nola or Wheeler don't go out there and match up well against yeah. somebody else's aces, they're going to lose those games. And they haven't been able to, you know, piece together their 3, 4, 5 starters to really just go ahead and win a series.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been what the Braves, even with Fried out, even with Wright out, you know, they went out and got Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
And he's a stud. Yeah. You know, yeah. He made one mistake all year, the base running blunder the other night where he didn't tag up on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I didn't
drive.
Even think that was big of a blunder myself. But anyway, go ahead.
No, only the situation dictates that, you know, the 5-5 game or whatever, it would have put him in the lead
yeah.
Or tied the game up. I can't remember which one. But, you know, yeah. he'd tell you, yeah, my gut told me it's gonna drop. He hit a little right. harder. It is what it is. But they have such a good grip on team. They do such a good job
yeah.
of bringing young players up at the right times. They've got kind of similar chemistry, I imagine, to when we played there. It's just you're not yeah. expected to go through kind of the rigmarole of being a rookie, being a second year guy. No, we yeah. want you to contribute right now. Come in, make impact. We need you. And if you're not that guy, we're going to give you some time to figure it out, because we have thumpers and Acuña being now, I mean, I know he's been playing a while, but he looks like he's back to
yeah.
the aggressive young player that just energizes the entire lineup. He gets on my nerves like everybody else's that maybe has watched a ton of baseball or played it yeah. at times because of some of the antics. But, you know, so do a lot of other guys, and they're all studs.
Yeah.
But the Braves matching up against anybody, not just the East, and not just the Phillies, they just cause so many issues. The back end of the bullpen better be good, because they got guys that can leave the park. They got guys that can steal bases when they need to, take the extra base. It's just the Braves are a lot of fun to watch. It surprises me anytime they lose back-to-back games, because they just have the depth and kind of the attitude to go along with it. Hey, we win here. This is what we do.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, Eric and I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, the importance of chemistry, and I think we've maybe some people that have listened or watched us have come to agree with how much that's been a factor in the Braves' run of 5 straight division titles and winning a World Series, and as having that continuity and having those key guys kind of set the tone. You had Freddie here for so long, you had Dansby here, you know, alongside him for the second half of Freddie's 10 years here. And even though this year everybody thought they were going to take a step back when they lost Freddie to free agency, when they didn't re-sign him. Same thing when they lose Dansby to free agency. And what happens? Arcia is playing as well as Dansby. I mean, I dare say Dansby won a gold glove last year, but Arcia is playing great and hitting better than Dansby this year. And they bring in Murphy and has fit the chemistry on this clubhouse. He's fit right in perfectly. And they got other guys that have kind of stepped up to fill some of that leadership void. And you got a guy like Charlie Morton, who's just invaluable with the younger pitchers. And then guys like Mentor in the bullpen that have been here for a long time. So, yeah, they've been able to – Alex has done a phenomenal job of bringing in guys that fit this clubhouse and this team chemistry without disrupting it, even when you lose a huge guy like a Freddie Freeman or a Dansby Swanson. So, having that continuity in the coaches, they've had the same coaches throughout this run. I think they got the best coaching staff in baseball, I really do. All these former players that are a kind of blend of old school, yet they take in the analytics and they present them to the players and let the players use the ones they're comfortable with, but they use the positioning and all that. So I think it's a good blend of old school and analytics, but all these former players they have on the team that on the coaching staff that Snitker delegates duties to. I think all that's so important, especially when you're struggling a little bit, when you lose guys like Fried and Wright, who was the only 20-game winner in the majors last year. I think all that continuity and chemistry is most important during times like that to prevent things from spiraling when they could.
Well, I'll tell you, from personal experience with Snit, I had a really rough start to the beginning of the year. I wasn't pitching well, pulled a hamstring, you know, wrapped it up, tried to play my own Chipper Jones angle there and just go play through the pain. And Snit grabbed me one day and he said, obviously, you've been in the big leagues for a while. You're going to pitch well. It's coming. You're not going to have an entirely bad year. You're going to have your good run. It's coming. What do you do well? Like, have you talked to Ross? David Ross? Have you talked to McCann? Have you gotten on the same page with Roger McDowell? You know, he just did a really good job of not just, you know, walking by and give me knucks or anything like that. It was like, he coached me, you know, he coached me on the mentality you might need with a team that he basically said, look, you've got Venters, you got O'Flaherty, you got three lefties in the pen. You're not going to have to face any guys that are going to do damage. Anytime we're in a close game, they're just going to bring them in. So just do what you do well, be that guy. Don't try to be anything more. And it resonated. You know, I remember after talking to him, I was running stairs in Atlanta. And I just remember thinking the whole time, like everything he said resonated and it calmed me down. It let me go out there and just execute and be who I am. And if that's not enough, then that's okay. But it was just Snit's demeanor and his timing. You know, he didn't talk to me up to a certain point. Then it was like, hey, it's probably the right time to go talk to Durbin right here. And he did. And you know, the rest of the year, I was really good.
There's no stat for that. There's no way to measure it. There's no way to even know if it's happening in other organizations. But it really is crazy how one small talk at the right time can just completely refresh your mindset and send you on your season on a completely different trajectory.
Yeah, and absolutely. He's without exaggeration, to a man, these guys have said, when you've asked them how – they'll lose two or three in a row and look like, oh man, this is when they're going to really slip. And then they'll turn it around and they win two out of three at Texas, you know, against a Texas team that's playing great baseball. Then they lose two to the Dodgers. And you think last night they lose to the two rookies, the game started by the Dodgers, two rookies prospects. And then last night they beat Tony Gonsolin, who's their ace. And so every time you think this was when they're going to start slipping, they win a game or they win a series. And you ask them, how do they keep this even keel and avoid? Because they're the only team in baseball, I think, that's not had a 5-game losing streak since 2018. And everybody says it starts with Snitker. Starts with Snitker and then the coaches. But it trickles down from the top. And he just has that demeanor in the clubhouse that they just do not panic. And then, you know, they get the results from being down. They saw it directly last year when they were down 10 behind the Mets 10 games out of first place at the end of May, and they reeled them in and won 101 games. And, you know, so they saw it happen, so that they, you know, if they didn't believe it before, they do then. But just Snitker just never panics. And within a game too, it's why they're such a good team at coming back late in games. They've got the guys to do it, obviously, But they don't. They look down the dugout and they're six games down. And Snicker's not throwing shit. He's not, you know, pissed and have bad body language and going, "What is going?" He, none of that. Same Never. Demeanor at all times, whether up five or down six.
Yep.
Yeah, very, very Joe Torre-esque with regards to that even keel and managing egos. He also never, it never seemed like, or it doesn't seem like when I'm watching that he ever puts somebody in a situation where he doesn't believe in them, number one, and he doesn't think that they're going to succeed.
Right.
You know, it just feels like, and I think after a little while as a player and you see that, they call you in, you know, from the bullpen or you go get, you're going to get a day off or you're not going to, you're going to face this guy. Hey, lefty on lefty, we got a really good one, but I think you're going right. Or this might get you right as a left-handed hitter. I'm going to throw you in there today. And they go 2 for 3 and then they catch fire.
Yeah.
That we've talked about that.
Little things like that.
We talked about that. Actually, I think the last episode we did, but yeah, Minter's struggling right now. And he's been put in some situation recently that, you know, maybe some people don't think is a good idea for a struggling reliever, but you know, I was pointing out to Dave, I was like this, when your manager shows you confidence like that, you know, it can backfire once in a while, but when it works and when you're struggling and you get to pitch anyway and you get put in this big situation and then you get out of it, that confidence you get from that outing and then the next time, you know, you're having a little, just a little, you're scuffling a little bit, you know that it's not, if I pitch bad, I'm never seeing the mound again. And that's the thing for me is the number one thing managers do wrong is they hide from struggling relievers. You got to put them out there and give them a chance to succeed and turn it around. Because when you feel that conga line thing happening, every single outing has that much more pressure and it's that much easier to fall into the trap of, oh shit, if I pitch bad, I'm not pitching again for 2 weeks. And that the pressure that adds versus having a manager say, I believe in you, you're going to get this done. And then you get it done and it's over. You know, it's the best way to stop a struggling reliever from, is to stop that momentum and get him going the right way.
He's learned so much.
Jim Leland, Charlie Manuel. Charlie was phenomenal at having the feel where, hey, you go out and you suck. You might go out a couple times in a row and you're just not sharp. And maybe you get out of one with some line drives and, you know, he's like, hey, I'm going to put you back in there. You know, I'm going to get you in there. And he would take the time to come walk by you and give you kind of the line that you needed to hear. And, look, all those guys have feel. They know what they're doing, and they'll be honest with you too. Hey, if this doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. I'm just going to have to make adult decisions here, and it's not going to be because you didn't get your shots, you know. Right. But at the end of the day, this is what it is.
Adult decisions make is a good term.
Yeah, they're putting guys in a position to succeed, put them in the best position, what you're talking about. Snit learned that all from Bobby Cox. I mean, he's learned so much from Bobby Cox, and that's what Bobby did. And he also, the loyalty to his players, to guys that he believes in. Most of the time, it's guys that he's had for a while that have succeeded and given him reason to believe in them. But he'll take the heat. You know, he's not scared of what the criticisms, and especially with social media today, which Bobby didn't have to deal with most of his career. Not that he would have given a shit, but Snit doesn't read social media or care about any of that stuff because he's at a point of his career. It's like, you know, I'm just in it because I love this team and winning.
Yeah.
And we want to win another World Series, but I'm not worried about 5 years from now. I'm not worried about next year. You know, he's not worried about job status. He's earned that right. And has enough gravitas, and that's a kind of, to me, those are the ideal managers, the guys you just mentioned, you know, the Jim Lelands, the guys that have that job security, that don't give a shit attitude, you know, but they're not going to make decisions based on appeasing a big percentage of the fan base that wants them to send this guy down or not put this guy back in a big spot or all that, because they know better. They know what the guy's capable of doing, and that in the long run, they're going to need that guy to be there.
Yep.
That's exactly right. And you know, as relievers, you start to, you know, or bench guys or even regular day players, you start, I mean, you're in the cage with these guys, you're in the bunker down there in the bullpen, and you communicate how you feel based on the conversation you had. And that resonates too. And it's just powerful to not have any panic button to hit in May or June when you know you're trying to figure out who's who this year.
Yeah.
And who's going to be able to play what role when August and September hit and the Phillies get hot and the Mets are healthy and, you know, who are we and how are we going to beat those teams? Right now we might beat them because we're just a better team than them, but they're going to get hot like they did last year. how are we going to be prepared? And that's where his brain is. That's, he goes and sits with Alex, or they sit together, they talk about it, get everybody on the same page. What's our plan right now to get some of these guys right?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's been proven over the course of time with him specifically that this is going to work. Just, you know, I have the right personnel. I have the right personality and character for this. My integrity shows, and the players are going to be a reflection of that.
Yeah. Rick Kranitz is a great pitching coach for him to have in that regard too, because they're on the same wavelength. They're same older guys that have been around the game forever, seen it all so many times. They don't panic. And, you know, when everybody like has given up on Joe Jimenez because he's not what he was with Detroit last year, Snit, Alex, they know he had back surgery, arthroscopic back surgery. They knew that when they made the trade for him. And he's been slow coming out of the gate. But instead of Snit abandoning him in a key role and maybe just pitching him in blowouts and going, yeah, I don't know what's wrong with him, Snit just keeps talking about how he's getting better every time they run him out there. Because they know by September, Jimenez could be that guy he was with Detroit last year. So they're letting him work through this and get better. And he keeps pointing out. And like Mentor, he keeps pointing out with Mentor. He's been one of the best lefties in baseball the last 2 or 3 years. You know, they know that the BABIP is absurd with him right now. So he's had some bad luck, and he's just not put away guys with 2 strikes. But the stuff is the same as it's been.
Yeah.
You know, even there, people keep saying he doesn't have the same cutter that he had. But if you look at it analytically, it looks like it's the same pitch. Sometimes guys just have bad luck, have bad stretches.
So that's exactly right. Look, the extra month plays in. You played 6 Octobers in a row.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or 3 or 4 as a reliever. And sometimes it takes the first half of the season to try to kind of figure out your new body, your routine, you know, that maybe you're fatigued, maybe you're stronger than you were because of the way you trained in the offseason. And you got to figure yourself out all over again.
Every year.
I think we're seeing some of that, by the way, with Michael Harris. Now, he's had 2 issues already this year. He had the lower back strain that put him on the IL for 4 weeks. And then he jammed his knee going crossing first base on the 3rd game back. And that, he had to wear a knee brace for a few games after that. But he put on about 15 pounds of muscle since last year and is noticeably thicker, bigger, more muscular from the waist down. Was it wise? I don't know. Maybe it was in the long run. But I think what Chad's talking about, I think he's getting used to that body too, because he's never played games with that body. And all of a sudden, he's a lot bigger than he was, you know? So who knows how much that affected.
And you got to tip your hat. You got to tip your hat to a guy trying to go get better.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean it was right. It doesn't mean that, you know, maybe you learn. I learned that I pitched best and performed my best between 207 and 216 pounds. Anything more or less, and my velocity dropped, or my stamina went away. I had to stay there, and it floated and changed. You know, you start getting older, you have to worry about mobility. When you're younger, like Harris is, maybe my body can do 15 more pounds, or maybe it's 8. Maybe the lean mass. Maybe I put on too much lean mass, and I just don't move the same.
Right.
You know, the tendons aren't ready for it. I mean, it's so individual.
Every guy has to figure out their puzzle. You know, we've talked about this before, but it's like, you know, everybody, there's a strength coach. It's pretty generic what's recommended for you. And there's pretty similar thoughts on all strength coaches. Yeah, more muscle's good, especially in today's game. Bigger's better and all this. And it's like, I'm the same as you. 205 to 210. I could control the ball and I threw my hardest. If I got up to 220, I was slow. I lost some velocity. If I got down to 195, 200, I was tired and I lost velocity. But it's crazy. And this is part of being a young player. As you go through these seasons, you know, you start learning where you need to be and where's your best weight, but you can't get the answer to that unless you try it. And there's nothing wrong with thinking I'm going to be better if I do this. Look at this guy. He's built like that. Look how many homers he's hitting. Or look at this guy. He's skinny and he's flying. Look at BJ Upton. He's fastest guy in the league. And then you look at Giancarlo Stanton, he's hitting 50 homers. Which one, where do I fit in and what's best for my body? And every young player kind of has to, you don't want to waste an offseason. So you're going to try something new every year. Sure. Then you get to camp and shit, that one didn't work. I better drop some weight. And then by May, June, July, you're like, I'm feeling the same again. I'm ready. But some years you do something and you come in, you're like, shit, I'm throwing 95 or I'm hitting bombs. This program worked and you stick with it. But everybody's got their own puzzle they got to kind of sort out.
Yeah. And Michael Harris, if you look between Rome, when he was at Rome a year later, last year, he had put on, he doesn't even look like the same kid. He looked like a kid at Rome. And then last year when he came up, he was probably 10, 15 pounds thicker at least.
And better.
Now he's another on top of that. But it's non-fat. If he came in with a belly or something, you'd be like, oh shit, he got, you know, he did too many appearances in the offseason here in Atlanta where he's become something of a, but wasn't that at all. He was like built like a fullback, you know, from the waist down. It's all muscle. It looks like he's been on the squat rack all winter. So he's obviously trying to get better.
He's trying to
hit 10 more home runs or whatever, you know, and just get better. So, I agree with Chad, man. People that see it and just think he's bigger, okay, now he got too big and all. But he's just trying to get better. I mean, this kid is all about trying to be the best he can be, you know. You don't have to worry about him ever working. So, yeah, he's probably just going to have to figure out where he's best. It's a good way of putting it.
You can't figure it out without trying it, you know, and there's always that – if I do this, I might get better. And sometimes it hits and you got a new routine. But when it doesn't, you know, that's your chance to adjust.
Yeah. The back might not hold up with another 20 pounds of muscle pounding in the walls and that kind of making those diving catches.
Every pound Andrew used to make is stress on the joint.
Andrew got heavier late in his career. And that's, you know, he wasn't hurt earlier in his career. I'm sure it was a combined all the catches that he made and all that. And he got bigger and started hitting more home runs and all that. But, you know. Different stress on the body. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to watch his career, the kid Harris. But people that are starting to say, oh, that contract, they did it too early. Come on, man. That contract, if he does nothing more than play great defense and hit 15 home runs a year, that's a great contract.
Yeah.
You know, and he's going to do a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, Trey Turner's the one that surprised me. You're talking about the Phillies, but I think there's something to that. Man, they went all the way to the final game in the WBC, so he probably missed half of spring training, close to it. Like Acuna only missed, Venezuela was eliminated earlier than anybody expected. He didn't miss much time, and he wasn't playing for a new team, you know. He's coming back from an injury, but that the WBC might have helped Acuna because he got into game shape earlier coming back from that knee, you know. And when he did come back over to camp, he had already played those big games, some big games in Venezuela. But Trey Turner, I think he hit more home runs at a WBC than he's hit this year, at least until that one he hit last night.
He was on fire.
I think it's dead tie. I think he's, you know, and here's the deal. We could probably earmark today or even the home run he hit yesterday.
Right.
And pay attention to what his numbers are the rest of the year, the next 400 at bats. And it's probably going to look like the back of his baseball card always has.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the one thing, and he's even struggled a little bit on defense. It's, you know, look, the Philly crowds are different than the crowds he's met in front of. And look, he said yesterday in the post game interview that he was getting booed by his mom, you know, which isn't a bad angle to take with the Philly media. Like, you just have to own it with the Philly media.
Yeah.
You know, they have high expectations, rightfully so, and you're going to get ate up. And I loved it. I loved the pressure of playing there. I had a blast with it. I think I made about 1% of his deal. But at the end of the day, Trey's going to be Trey. The guys love him in the clubhouse. They're like, man, what a great teammate. He does everything right. You know, Schwarber is a leader and doing kind of the same stuff there. Those guys aren't going to struggle for an entire year.
Yeah.
And when Trey catch Turner's fire too good, and Harper's back to healthy – the lineup's a nightmare. I mean, look, Marsh and Bohm are young players that have high ceilings that came out, you know, pretty well early. Bryson Stott is a really – he surprised me. Last year, he looked like he did not belong in the big leagues. And then changed some things on the back half of the season. He started to get in the cage with the right guys that kind of taught him about who he is and what he needs to do. And he kind of took off. I mean, they really do have a deep lineup. They have a good bullpen. They're playing much better defense this year. I think it's just a matter of kind of floating in that second, third place window again, trying to get to 88 or 89 wins, getting a wild card spot again. I don't think anybody's catching the Braves. That's my opinion.
I think Trey Turner, oh, he kills the Braves, by the way. He has, going back to his Nationals days. But and I like their lineup too when they can move Harper to first base and they can get Schwarber in the DH role. You know, Dave Dombrowski, he's going all the chips on the table at all times late in his career. He wants to win another World Series. And you know he's going to go out and make a move before the deadline and add another hitter.
And probably another starting arm.
I mean, he'll do it.
He's going to wheel and deal. I've been behind him on airplanes. I've been behind him in beach rooms. And he's got MLB trade rumors open on his desktop. He's wheeling and dealing at all times. Like you said, he's not scared to go out and get a couple guys to throw 100 miles an hour. And if one of them hits, great. I will tell you this. This is something interesting in talking to him. Is he looks for guys that hit plus pitching well. Castellanos is one of those guys. Trey Turner is one of those guys. Schwarber is one of those guys. Obviously, Bryce Harper. They're looking. He's not just looking at when they're facing the Colorado Rockies in a regular season game. He's looking at who's going to perform in October when we get there.
Right.
And I like he's going to go out there and hunt that down. He's going to hunt that down. So that to me is one of the keys to a lot of these GMs when they're picking guys up. Some guys' numbers are, it's an average. So your OPS, your OPS plus, your average, all that stuff is an aggregate of the whole season. But who are you when we're facing, the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guys or the starter, for whoever it is, Dodgers, Braves, who are you when we need big hits and big moments? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he's been there. I mean, he's seen what it takes to win, and he's had the kind of managers we were talking about. He's always hired those kind of guys. I covered him when he was still the wonder boy of GMs. Back when he was with the Marlins, he came over from Montreal, and he was like the youngest general manager in baseball. Now he's like the oldest general manager in baseball. But with the Marlins, he was in his early 40s, and that was really young at that time to have that role. But he immediately established this reputation of making bold moves. And you look at what he's done. I mean, he's going, no doubt, Hall of Famer. I mean, they won a World Series with the Marlins. He goes to Detroit. They went to the World Series two or three times. He goes to the Red Sox. They win a World Series. He goes to the Phillies after being in semi-retirement, waiting for the Nashville thing to open up. I mean, get that thing going. And he takes the Phillies to the World Series. I mean, this guy, he gets it done, man.
He's proven it, and you got a lot of GMs, guys like Mark Shapiro, who's been around for almost as long. But they watch who does what well, and they it's a just like they call the NFL, the league of mimicking what everybody else is doing, and that's what a lot of guys are doing. Dave in with the Marlins and with Detroit, and with he hasn't quite done it with the Phillies as much, but he will flip an Andrew Miller and a Cameron Maybin.
Absolutely. He'll trade prospects.
He'll look at Andrew Painter, who throws 100 and he's 19 years old, who had a little bit of elbow inflammation and missed some time. He'll look at him, and if he can flip him and maybe get him again 6 years later, knowing the type of character they are, like Cameron Maybin and Andrew Miller are high-end character integrity guys, and he flipped them. And then later on, he goes and gets those guys again because he knows, hey, I know who you are. You went ahead and became a big league stud. We'll pay you now.
Yeah.
And he has that recipe and he trusts it. And other GMs are in on it. They're like, hey, we'll take those prospects, take this off of our books and you go win. We're building he just does a really good job of that. And I've watched it happen over and over again.
Yeah. He's bold, man. He's Eric's kind of GM. Eric said if he was a GM, he'd burn the franchise down, trading all the prospects. if he had a chance to win, he'd trade any prospect to get a guy to win.
I just, that's always my thing. Me and Dave always talk about it, and I'm just like, I don't care what a prospect's doing in the minor leagues. I want to see what happens when the bright lights come on. And, you know, you get those known commodities, those guys that are putting up numbers in the big leagues. You know what you're going to get from them, and you're trying to win. Man, you can have any prospect you want if you give me one of those studs that's already doing it. If I had a chance to get Trey Turner last year or something like that, or sign him or whatever you got to do, it's like you get a player like that, I know what I'm getting. I don't want to go through the growing pains of a prospect figuring the league out.
And we've seen a little bit of that 100%. This year with Arcia at shortstop when they had to go with Grissom for a couple of weeks.
Yep. Yeah. And he'll figure it out, but sometimes you don't have time.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, Chad, we really appreciate your input, dude. That's great. I love it. Love your perspective on this stuff. I'm sure our listeners and viewers will too. We appreciate it, man.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard to get the smoke and mirrors working in just audio, but, you know, sometimes it works.
Oh, yeah. We'll get you on again soon, I hope. All right?
Anytime. Yeah, fire at me anytime. Oh, I will definitely answer your texts, your calls, so don't hesitate.
All right. Good talking to you, Derv.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. All right.
You know, just sitting down in the bullpen with a guy that's that thoughtful and I mean, he tells you how good you are all year long. I mean, if you look at the year I was teammates with him, I had that same rough start 2012. But
yeah,
you're around guys like that day in, day out. It's like there's never a bad vibe coming out of that guy. And that's like a good example of chemistry right there is you're hanging out with a guy like that. You're sitting down there the first five, six innings of the bullpen, you know, the game in the pen. And it's just, I mean, it's good vibes, positive thoughts, good, you know, thoughtful stuff. You go to them for something. They have something good to say. That story about him, you know, with Snit was really a good example of it for me too. Because
that was Snit was third base coach then, right? That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, and that's not even Snit's role, but it can come. That's why you fill your clubhouse up with good people because it could come from anybody at any time. And you know, I know I said it before, but Rick Ankiel gave me a tip on my slider that I held on to the whole year, and it's just you create an environment where guys are communicating. They're pulling each other along. They don't let each other get too down. And that's how you avoid those major slumps as a team.
Yeah. And Snit's background, so many decades as a minor league manager.
It's all about getting people right.
And player development for a while. That helps in those situations like that where he approaches it from that angle too. And man, it's invaluable. There's something to all these teams that are hiring managers who are in their 30s, you know, early 40s that have no experience because they can relate to the players and all. But there's also something to guys having just a long background in the minor leagues and seeing guys develop and knowing what it takes. There's something to that experience, man.
Well, the minor leagues is all about figuring it out. So it's all about knowing kind of what buttons to push to get the most out of guys.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that as much in the majors, but the Braves have had a ton of young players. Ton of guys coming to new teams with, you know, off a down year. And it's just, you know, you'd be shocked how much of a difference the people you're around makes throughout a major league season.
And look at the managers that have won the World Series in the last decade.
Yeah.
It's not the guys that are doing it with no experience.
No. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting what he said about Dombrowski getting guys looking for guys that hit plus pitching.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you hear that. You hear that. Bobby would say it, and Snit says it. He'll say it talks about Ozuna. When it got Ozuna, said he's a guy that always hit good pitching in the past. It wasn't just that he hit – that was a good hitter, but he always hit good pitching. And Freddie always hit good pitching, you know?
Yeah.
That's important when they come to the postseason because you're going to face nothing but good pitching. You're not going to see those fourth and fifth starters anymore in the postseason at all.
That's a lot of times why I give Freddie so much credit because he hits pitches I don't think he should. You know, like I saw him face a lefty for his, I think it was his 300th homer or something, but most of my career, that lefty-lefty sinker in was a get-out-of-jail-free card. You weren't getting hurt on it for sure, and you were probably getting a ground out. And he stays inside it, hits it out to left center. You know, I didn't see anybody do that.
A couple nights ago was...
Yeah.
You should drop off Charlie. Bad hit. Yeah.
That's completely vertical, but yeah. That was good stuff.
How about the one Jay Hay hit last night, by the way, or two nights ago?
I didn't see Jay Hay's. I'll look at it.
Jay Hay hit a fastball at the Strider fastball, 97. Nobody hits it up in the zone. Nobody hits Strider's fastball that high in the zone out. It's been happened one time before. Jay Hay hit it. It was above the strike zone, 97-something. Look it up. And Jay Hay.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody Jay Hay
crushed
that.
It. Yeah. Big guy like that runs into one, man.
It's going a long ways when Jay Hay gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. He looks pretty good. I mean, looks a lot better than he used to.
Yeah,
he made a little swing adjustment, and he looks exactly the same physically. By the way,
that's my anytime somebody wants to talk about you get into these conversations about how athletes are built and guys are just built different. I always go back to the story where the Braves asked Jay Hay to bulk up a little because they felt like he got tired in 2010 or 11, one of those years. Jay Hay put on 35 pounds of muscle in one offseason. And it was just God-given, just great genetics, just incredible body. But he didn't put on an ounce of fat. And I was like, man, I've been working my ass off for 15 years, and I've probably put on 6 pounds of muscle and some fat. And this guy in one offseason just did body weight workouts and puts on 35. You know, that was just an example for me of how some guys are just built different.
Yeah, some guys just have the V back and they eat right and lift weights, and it immediately pays dividends.
Yeah, tomorrow. We joked that. Like, DJ does 6 bicep curls. He's got bigger biceps tomorrow.
It's funny, him and Freddie, man, right now, might be in the best physical condition of their life. I know Freddie looks like he is. Freddie's in great shape, man. He's a little leaner.
Oh, yeah.
But just as strong.
You look at pictures of him when he came up.
Oh, yeah, I mean, a lot leaner than that, but I mean leaner than the last few years. Yeah. He looks great.
Oh, he's in Hollywood.
He wants to last a while.
Got to look good in that suit.
Hey, just a couple things on the Braves before we hit. Bryce Elder, dude, he's done it enough times now, and last night, really, against a veteran lineup that's patient, that's making him work, he got out of 3 jams in the first 3 innings. He stranded 2 runners every inning. They went 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position last night. Most of that was against Elder. This kid's for real, man. He is a pitcher's pitcher. He doesn't overpower anybody. He mixes like 4 pitches in there, and he's ballsy. He just goes at guys. I mean, he's such a throwback.
You know, the hardest thing to do, and it was a big moment in my career that changed when I had this realization, but the hardest thing to do is when shit starts getting hairy is to truly believe that a good pitch gets me out of it. You know, you see so many guys start nibbling or trying to do too much when first and second, one out. And if you can just believe to yourself and tell yourself, if I make a good pitch here, this guy's going to hit a ground ball, we'll get a double play, and we're out of it. And stay calm. And I think, you know, some guys it takes more work than others, and some guys it's a learning process, but he seems to have that naturally, where when he gets in those jams, he just keeps just chipping away, just making pitches, you know, knowing that. And that's where, you know, when he struggled, I thought it was, you know, some walks and kind of nibbling a little bit. But you look at his line from yesterday, 1 walk. So he's got the balls, even against the Dodgers lineup, to just make pitches at 90. You know, it's one thing to sit there and say, oh, if I make this pitch when you throw 100. But he's got the balls at 90, 92 to say, if I make a pitch, I'm going to get a good result. And you wouldn't think it's that complicated, but when everything speeds up and the crowd's roaring and he's still a young guy in the game. It's really easy, and you see it all the time. Guys start overthrowing and leaving balls middle. He just keeps just making quality pitches, and it's paying off.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. Was the walks was what killed him when he was at the beginning of last year when he got sent down. He was walking 4 or 5 guys, you know? Yeah. And he comes back, and he's drastically reduced the walks, and it's like immediate results. And it's just night and day what he's doing now. When he gets in trouble and he doesn't nibble, he just keeps going at guys. So if they're going to hit it, they're going to hit it. But he lets them put it in play. And usually the defense, because he gets so many ground balls. Yep. That's what he said as a sinker baller. We asked him about getting out of all those jams. He said, as a sinker baller, I know I'm going to give up hits. Sometimes I'm going to give up a lot of hits. Yep. He gave up 6 hits in the first 3 innings last night, all singles. But as a sinker baller, I also know that I'm one pitch away from getting a ground ball and double play, which he did last night. But he gets guys to hit in the ground balls, and with the defense playing well behind him, he's a really solid pitcher. And good Lord, where would they be without him doing what he's doing this year? He's got the 3rd lowest ERA in the league.
Yeah, it's all mentality. You know, it's so easy to get wrapped up in the game, but it really is. I mean, if you make quality pitches, the problem is when you start walking guys, now everybody moves up a base. And you're going to give up your ground balls, your hard hit ground balls. You're going to give up your bloop singles. And you know, it's so hard to score on how many times you see a guy give up 3 singles in an inning.
Yeah.
But when they give up 2 singles and a walk, and then a single, you know, like you add in that walk for whatever reason, when you add in that walk, that might've been the guy that hits a double play and you give up those first two to lead off an inning and then you walk that guy, you know, that all of a sudden the inning's out of control and your base is loaded, no outs, instead of even just getting one and first and second, you got an open, second and third, you got an open base. For me, it's a hard lesson to learn, but he's got it figured out and he's got the balls to just keep chucking it in there. And it's huge. Yeah.
When I start the game with two singles last night, Betts and Freddie, you're going, uh-oh, this could be the night where he gets rocked. So then what does he do?
He's not. You know, a pitcher, some guys right. do. They're like, it's the Dodgers, I'm going to get lit up, and he's not. Just keep making pitches.
Next three guys, he goes force at second, grounder, strikeout swinging on Muncy, then gets Martinez looking, strikeout at the end of that inning. After a wild pitch, there were runners at second and third, and he strikes out those guys. Then he gets in the second inning, consecutive one-out singles to the 7 and 8 hitters in the lineup, Vargas and Peralta. Then he strikes out Chris Taylor and gives Betts on a 6-4. Third inning, walks the second guy, his only walk of the game, Will Smith, gives up a two-out hit to Martinez and gets Jason Hayward to ground out in that inning with two on. Hits a guy to start the fourth. Gets the next guy, David Peralta, to ground into a 6-4-3 and strikes out Taylor to end that inning. Gave up a leadoff homer to Betts, and that was it. That was in the fifth. That was the only run he gave up. And what did he do after that? Instead of like going, oh, shit, you know, it's panicking or getting in trouble, he strikes out the next guy, Freddie, and gets Will Smith to ground out and strikes out Muncy. So he's retired the next three in that inning and then gave up a single to Hayward in the sixth, and that's it. So, I mean, it was just solid, solid outing against a really good lineup. He's 101 pitches he gets through six innings. So he's doing exactly what they need to do, especially with the bullpen being stressed like it is right now. And, you know, and two guys, two starters out. So if they can get Soroka or, you know, Schuster doing what Schuster's done the last couple of starts, he'll give him a fourth. They get Soroka up here. The rotation could be pretty okay until they get free back. You know, around the All-Star break.
Yeah, he's. I mean, him stepping up at the time he did is you can't put a value on it.
That at bat by Darno in the ninth inning last night was such a that was a pro at bat that advances the runner get to third. That was just huge. Riley gets that double. That great signs from Riley the last couple of nights because he's been really struggling and he lined a couple of doubles last night. He had the one. He lines the one to the corner, left field corner to get to second to start that ninth. And then Darno moves him over. And then Ozzie, with two outs, fouls off three straight pitches. And he's batting left-handed, by the way, against Bickford, the right-hander. Fouls off three straight pitches and hits one deep to right, scores Riley easily, no play. Everybody wants him to give up switch hitting. Probably would just say he would hit a two-run homer if he's sitting right-handed there.
Has Ozzie ever not switch hit? You know, with not, an injury
not,
or
not since the Braves drafted him. Not since the Braves drafted him. They wanted him to switch it right away. So yeah, we've been like when he's 16, maybe.
I never understand the logic of how do you know how he's going to handle a righty-righty slider?
You know what the people take to the as evidence that he could do it? They take like the 10 at bats he's got righty on righty, which is those at bats came against position players throwing junk. You know how and you know how guys will often do that against knuckleballs so they don't script their swing for a few days afterwards, so they'll hit their natural style against a knuckleballer. He's done that against position guys, and against the Nationals had a guy. Was it Harper? It's a pitcher name. It was a guy that had a big curveball. He had like a nasty cutter, I think. He did that against him and took him deep once. And that's it. Those are the at-bats that he's had righty on righty.
Yeah, so those are selected. Where right. It's like I'm lefty-left or lefty-righty. This guy has a pitch that I just don't want to deal with. And I just feel better about going righty. Exactly. But it's not like he's doing against a primo righty ace, you know. So yeah. For me, there's when I hear that he should stop switch hitting or do this, I'm like, how do you have any idea how he's going to fare against good righties, guys that he doesn't choose to face righty-righty?
And obviously he wouldn't be comfortable doing it because that's like, why didn't want to do it? He said,
he would have done it a long time ago.
Right, right. He was talking about Elder, and he said, I love when he's pitching. He's just going attacking the hitters. This is Ozzie. If they hit the ball, they hit a lot of ground balls, and we have our defense working great for him tonight too. Elder with runners on base, Ozzie said, really impressive what he does because he doesn't panic or anything. He just has a plan. Is that? Yeah, that's Ozzie. He just has a plan, and he goes out and executes that plan and makes pitches, gets guys to ground out, hitting a double play or pop it up.
Yeah.
And then Bryce was talking about that, his quotes about that. He said, I think as a sinker baller, history will tell you you're going to give up hits. There's a chance you're going to give up a lot of them. So I think just kind of picking your spots, when to go for pitches and when to not, to just kind of work around people, I think that's what I'm doing. I gave up a lot of hits but made pitches when I needed to.
Yeah. I can't explain how hard it is. Knowing, you know, this could be a three-run homer here, to still trust the pitch and make it. But the guys that can trust it and just make the pitch, you get rewarded for it.
I asked Elder about how big this could be for Riley, you know, for the team, for Riley to get back. If he's starting to round into, you know, Riley shape and start to be himself. And he said, Elder said, very big. What was crazy, I was thinking the other day that we would call that a slump for him, and he was still batting 250. So I know where he's about to go is going to be really, really, really fun to watch. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's a funny thing, though. These kids today, when they hear 250, he thinks like 250 wasn't great back in the day, but 250 is fine today for a power hitter. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think Carlos Pena started that year. He hit 30 or 40, hit batting 210.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Rays were okay with it. And it's kind of just been that
way.
You've had so many Joey Gallos and guys like that over the years that you hit 235 with 40 will take you.
Yep. All right. Well, this will be a big series against the Phillies. Braves got a chance to put a little distance between them. The Marlins are the team that's actually tied with the Mets right behind them. But I think over the long run, I don't think anybody thinks the Marlins have enough talent to hold their spot there. And the Phillies are probably going to make a run of some kind. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Mets do. Now they have Scherzer and Verlander, but they've got a lot of problems, man. The Mets do.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But Braves got a chance to make some hay here. They got four against the Phillies, and then they go out to Oakland for three, and Oakland is awful. They're just terrible. But the Diamondbacks series is going to be tougher than we had thought. Diamondbacks are playing good ball.
Yeah.
So they go there. They go there after Oakland. So they need to go out and clean up against Oakland before they go to Arizona, because Arizona's playing good ball right now. They're, I think, 10 games over 500.
Well, and Oakland's a tough series from the angle that there's going to be nobody there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big change from Truist Park and some of the places they've been going on the road recently.
Right, they could come out flat, yeah.
That's how, you know, we used to play like shit in Miami at that old stadium. It was hot. There was nobody there. You know, you don't have that adrenaline. And then the Diamondbacks, a tough stadium to go to for whatever reason, too. I feel like every time any team I went to there, we always had to battle. It feels like teams in their division aren't fazed by it and they beat them up. But it's a different park and ball flies different.
Yeah, good hitters park.
Good hitters park.
But Oakland could help having a couple of A's on the team now, though.
Yeah. Yeah, they won't be fazed by it. And that ball Olson hit last night.
Oh, my God. He crushed that ball. Oof. On top of the chop house.
Yeah. I think that's the first one I remember seeing that bounced on top.
I've only seen about three on top of it like that. But that was towering, man. It was like 456.
He's got some power.
He does. He's got them long levers like Freddie, too. And when he fucking connects, it's like.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do this again after the Philly series. We'll do this out in Oakland before they play them out there. But we appreciate it, everybody. Hope you enjoyed having Durbin on here. We'll have him on here again. 7:55 is real. We are out. Appreciate it.
Hey,
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.